Hey, listeners, are you getting inspired to dive deeper into your learning of EFFT? If so, head on over to Catherine's website to check out her list of upcoming trainings. Some trainings are focused on combining EFFT with young kids and EFFT play therapy. So head on over to her website and we hope to see you in the future. Check it out at katherinedebruin.com, katherinedebruin.com, and we hope to see you in the future.
Welcome to the Family Express podcast, where our destination is resilient and connected families. Come aboard with your hosts, marriage and family therapists, Katherine DeBruin and Rhonda Evans, to explore the world of emotionally focused family therapy, a model developed by Sue Johnson and colleagues. Together with our guest speakers, our travels will map the EFFT landscape, highlighting lessons learned, shared fears, and the passion and curiosity that bonds our community.
Welcome back to the next episode of the Family Express with Katherine DeBruin and Rhonda Evans. We are here with our guest today, Dr. James Hawkins. I think out of Arkansas, is that correct, James?
Yeah, that's correct, Rhonda.
Okay. We're so excited for our conversation today. We're going to center it around parental block, particularly shame. And I am leaning in with a lot of curiosity. I know I'm going to learn here today. James, thank you so much for being here.
It's an honor to, one, I'm still locating myself in a way. I'm still trying to learn EFFT well. So I'm looking
Aren't
forward
we all?
To learning from you all while I can share what nuggets of wisdom I might have.
Fantastic. I'm sure we're going to catch some nuggets. That's awesome. James, can we just start with you telling us a little bit about your journey into EFFT and what you're excited about with EFFT?
Hey, thank you. I like that question because I'm like, why am I willing to invite more people in the room? Because the more people you invite in the room, the more complicated it gets. And then we're going to be talking about this topic. And then when you talk about people with parenting, it just feels like the moment you start talking about parenting, it already puts us on the edge of shame a little bit. So why am I willing to do this? Well, one, I do believe in seeing couples and I really enjoy that. And a lot of couples present talking about, family issues, or I kind of got this from Lisa and Catherine, that it's okay. Like in stage three, when the couples kind of resolve some things and consolidate it, it's good to introduce like, hey, is there anything going on in your family that you want to take these new gains and be able to apply towards? So anyway, that's what got me interested in is just seeing the whole systemic impact that you can have by doing this work with families and couples together. I get a lot of parents that want to drop their kids off. And I think there's a place for that. But also I do love when I get to do that parenting work and help the parent embody a presence for the child in their vulnerability. So.
Oh, wow. Hey, Dr. Hawk, it's so good to have you here, man. Okay. And love that you're just diving in with the tough stuff of EFFT. Mm-hmm. And you're saying you like it complicated because the more people in the room, the more complex it gets.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I'm willing to hear your opinions. I'm like, sometimes for individuals with me, there's not like, it doesn't feel like there's this energy that kind of compels me in a way that's a little bit harder. When there's people in the room and the dynamics are alive, that's when it feels like therapy holds my attention the most.
Oh, I hear what you're saying because I feel like it's easier the more people in the room. It's definitely more complex to structure, but it's easier to see all the dynamics playing out. So it helps come to a clearer hypothesis more quickly than when I'm working with an individual.
Thank you. You helped me right there. You can see the dynamics playing out in real time, not just what someone's reporting to you. That's good.
Yeah. And I think because I'm like a visual learner, it's helpful for me to see that everyone's reactions. Mm-hmm. But I like what you're talking about too, is like there's an energy that actually it sounds like it keeps you engaged.
Yeah. This work we do is very vulnerable for the parents and children involved in it to allow yourself to be open in a caregiving system for your child when you're scared that they might do something that harms themselves, or for a child to risk really letting mom and dad see some very painful, scary parts for them, it's hard. And that vulnerability, probably I can feel it in the room, and it makes me kind of like be on guard and like really dial me in. So,
and that vulnerability you really love, because then you feel like you can make a difference in exactly. the work you do.
Exactly.
100%. Wow. That's really cool to know about you. I like hearing this.
See, I'm learning more about myself already.
I'm sitting here over here, like nodding my head, like, yes, yes, yes to all of these points. There's that energy in the room. It's so clear because it's happening in front of you. And to me, that's also why it's faster. And the structure part is where I find myself in early stage one, you know, who do I see when and in what order and all that stuff. But I really just, I'm just so, and I was really vibing, James, when you were talking about going from couples to then inviting families. And I put a little heart emoji because I was like, yes, the unofficial step 10.
There we go. I like it. Straight from Lisa Palmer Olson and Captain the Brain.
So, okay, Dr. Hawk, take us into, so you love that vulnerability that keeps you engaged. Okay, what's the hardest vulnerability that you face when you're working with parents around parental blocks? Take us into a hard moment.
Yeah, I think it's when shame consumes the parent. And the part that makes that, I would say, that really hard is because, as you know, I'm sure you've probably told your listeners, like, because when that shame consumes the parent, it takes away their caregiving system for the child. And
okay, let's slow that down, because that's already just brilliant, right? That in the in attachment, we've got a caregiving system, we've got an exploratory system, we've got a sexual system, and we've got an attachment alarm system. But when we're looking at parenting or parents are really responding in a caregiving frame to children, right? Children are seeking attachment needs from parents. Parents are responding with caregiving. And you're saying when the parents in their own attachment alarm, like in shame, it shuts off their caregiving ability, which you're saying makes them basically like inaccessible to their kids in that moment.
It does. Because think about some of the messages in the shame. Not only is it the attachment distress, but in the attachment distress, the message that I sometimes get from my parents is, I'm horrible. I've totally messed everything up. And it's almost like there is completely irredeemable.
Yeah.
And then it's hard to get them to believe that they have anything good to offer to the child in their need.
It's a terrible moment, right? I mean, exactly. It's a terrible moment when you see a parent, because they literally sometimes just like start weeping.
Yes.
Like they just start bawling, right? And like in that moment, they suddenly see what how they've contributed to their kid's distress.
Yeah.
And they are heartbroken and they lose it, right?
Yeah.
And you're saying in that moment, they're completely in themselves. They're completely flooded in their own attachment distress.
Yes, yes, yes. And particularly it's shown up for me, if I'm going to give it a location. Most of my family work up until this point right now has been adult children and their parents. So that might help. So then you kind of start walking with the adult child through some of their work and how they learn their strategies for coping with their own inner world. And then as the child's story starts to unfold, you can almost look over out the corner of your eye and you can see the parent putting the pieces of the puzzle together.
Yeah.
And it's like almost before the child comes to the realization, the parent's like, oh, I know when you had to do that. It's when I was going through this, this, and this. And because I couldn't get my stuff together, there is why you're suffering. And I can't believe I did that to you. I messed you up.
So as the child is like opening up and telling their story, the parent's like tanking.
Exactly.
Putting pieces together and tanking emotionally.
And I love how you put that together. And just think about the timing of that. The child's putting it together and it's almost getting distilled. If we think about our EFT tango, we're like in move two, and as it's getting distilled and getting clearer, and hopefully we hope in EFFT that activates the caregiving system of the parent. But sometimes it hijacks and the parent gets caught up in, like, just like how Catherine said it so brilliantly, they start seeing the part that they played, and it can start taking them to a place of, I can make it better. We would hope they could say, oh, I get a chance and opportunity now to join my child to make it better.
Yeah.
But shame says, no, you can't because you're this, this, and this. And you
okay, you've messed wow. up. Okay, this is really fun talking this through with you. So as the child is distilling this, putting the story on the table, they're opening up more. Mm-hmm. And this is exactly when we want the parent to be there for them. Mm-hmm. But as the parent is metabolizing this, they lose their emotional balance. Exactly. So exactly when we need the parent in their caregiving capacity, the parent, it gets hijacked. But yeah. Also the reframe is that the parent, because they're caregivers and they care, they're so mm-hmm. deeply affected by what yes. the child is saying. But yes. at some point, their pain and distress just yeah. overruns their ability to make it about the kiddo and yeah. see that they could have a redo. Like this actually means something amazing that their kid's opening up in front of them.
Yeah. And if for the listeners right now, if you want to, like, so what do I do about it? Rewind the tape and do the reframe that Catherine just did. I know that it sounds, this is where it's hard, Catherine. I think I'm still getting better. It's because what we could end up doing in that moment is completely just almost try and talk the parent out of it and get them back on board. But what you did is you kind of leaned into it and the good reasons why it has to exist. So, of course, even this part of you that's getting hard on yourself as you see your child's story come up, it's there because you care about them so much. And so, you know, I know it tells you yeah. so many bad things about you, but what it's telling me is that you're a parent who cares. And I really appreciate that.
Yeah,
and I want to see, and this is a key line, I want to see if we can use that part of you that cares so much about your child to not beat up on you. But if that part of you could come forward and speak for your child
yeah.
and come towards them now, how yeah. might it want to be present?
Yeah.
So oh my gosh.
In essence, what we would call, like, this is where, you know, George's influence, that's like flipping the block.
Yeah. So this is very, very crucial, right? This piece that you're doing, which is, mm-hmm. yes, the parent shame shows up. It's flooding. Mm-hmm. It has the ability to pull us under as well.
Yes.
But we simply cannot afford to go there because we've got a kid on the table who's that's opening right. up. Mm-hmm. And so we want to very quickly, okay, flip the block, like you're saying, mm-hmm. and reframe it into the parent's intention, which is that it's because they're such a caring parent, because mm-hmm. they're deeply affected by their child, that this is touching them in such a deep way. But we quickly pull them back into their parenting job. We remind that's right. them, hold on. Hold on to your horses. You got to show up as a parent right now. Here's the parenting work.
Yeah. Yeah. And then that's where you, as the therapist, you fill that role of being the one that responds to the parent's shame and help not let the child have to feel like they've got to bear that.
Yeah. Right?
This is where EFFT does require a different level of focus. And
yeah.
if I'm, this is me telling on myself and being honest, and you have to be careful, even when it's an adult child. This is where Jim Furrow really helped me out. He supervised the case I was doing. And Jim is just so kind and gentle in his feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And he just, I knew I was struggling in the case. And he asked me this question. He said, James, how would this moment be different if you saw that 30-year-old woman as a 14-year-old girl with her mother? And I was like, what do you mean? Mm. He says, I need you to see that even though she's 30 right now and you're working with her and her mother, she's mm. still using the strategies as though she was when she was the 14-year-old girl.
Mm-hmm.
And how would you come alongside that 14-year-old girl and help her in that moment when mom is struggling and drowning in her shame? How would you help stabilize the 14-year-old girl?
Yeah.
And then go work with mom.
What did you do, James? How did that change your perspective in that moment?
Well, what you just said is what sparked it. So I have to remember, this is the focus. Because what happens when shame enters our room as therapists, we're caring people. If someone starts flooding out in shame, it's going mm-hmm. to quickly draw our attention. Mm-hmm. But we can't forget there's a child over there who's struggling right now.
Yeah.
Even
yeah.
if they're an adult, there's a child over there that's struggling. So what I first need to do is respond to the child and honor the risks they took and opening mm-hmm. up and telling. Mm-hmm. Because for children, and Catherine, you can definitely speak to this more. But there is a part where children do try and really protect their parents. And so mm-hmm. when a child opens up and they see that them opening their world does something bad to their parents, many mm-hmm. children will learn, don't do that again.
Yeah.
Don't make mom or dad or parents feel that way.
Right.
And so I have to remember that. Go stabilize the child first before I start trying to work with the parents' shame in a way.
Yeah.
So that's one way in which that when Jim's feedback helped me out.
That's remembering. Great. That's great. Because that helps you jump in faster and mm-hmm. prioritize where you're going to go
yeah.
and remind you to very quickly, we're not just following any emotion. We're not just following the shame and going exploring with that with the parent. Right. We are pulling them back into a parenting capacity
correct.
And their parenting intention to respond to the child.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's be honest, though. I mean, I've had many moments with families where I've missed that lovely, lovely gap, that lovely focus. And the way it's played out is that the parent does go cry and they go into their shame. And, you know, I try to bring them back and soothe them. And for some reason, I can't. And then, like you said, I end up going back to the kiddo. And at that moment, the kiddo is a little lost or, you know, overstimulated mm-hmm. because, of course, it's so painful to see their parent have a tough time.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I have explored that with the kid, what is it like to see your parent go to this place of shame?
Mm-hmm.
I think in the healthier situations, the kid has said, oh, man, I hate to see that. I really hate it when my dad is so sad about what happened. Mm-hmm. Like it makes me just want to zone out, or it really burdens me. One child said, have you had situations like that where you've missed, you know, reframing the shame and it has affected the kid?
Oh, totally.
Okay. Oh, okay. Totally. Good. I feel better now.
Whew. Totally. And then I probably made one of the worst mistakes you can work when you're working with parents. And then you start going into like psychoeducation, which just makes them feel like they're getting it even more wrong. And then you start doing psych ed in front of the kid. So you're teaching the person how to be a parent in front of the child, which that's just not a good, that's not some of my best work there.
Right. And sometimes my brain even goes to that awful place of thinking, hey kid, could you just help your parent? Like give them a, a free, like validate that. I'm like, no, it's not a job. Right. But boy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why I'm glad y'all are doing a podcast like this and all the people who have helped, you know, advance, because EFFT does require, each modality of EFT, but to that type of focus and intentionality and keeping things in order in your mind is really important in EFFT work.
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, worst case scenario, if you can't balance both of these things at the same time, a child who's open, vulnerable, a parent who's going down a shame chute, like you could have one of them step out of the room and work with them individually for a moment. So mm-hmm. you could structure it that way, listeners, if you need to. Sometimes I have missed the shame. And then when I go check in with the kid has tuned out or has sometimes just been honest and said, that's really hard for me to hear. I hate it when my parent goes to that place. And then I've been able to validate their response, but that's mm-hmm. not their burden to carry. And then I've been able to enact that back to the parent and say, wow, parent, I know that you care so much about your kid, that you're devastated by the way that you've affected them in their life. And so in a moment like this, where you lose yourself into your pain and shame about mm-hmm. the places you haven't been able to parent in the ways you've wanted, did you know that even hearing that is actually quite burdensome for the kiddo?
Yeah.
And so I'm wondering if you and I can make a spot to discuss that at some point. This moment now, could we push it to the side? Because here's the deal. You're here right now. You're here to make it right. And you're deeply sensitive to what your child's been through. Could we have you speak to this parenting part?
Yeah.
You know, exactly. And then kind of am able to get it back on the right focus again.
That's good. I like that.
Let's pause for a brief break. Listeners, we'll be back.
Listeners, check out our book for children of any age. It's called A Jumble of Thoughts and a Tangle of Feelings. It's on Amazon.com. If you know a child out there who is having a tough time, but unable to put that stress into words, this book is your guide to helping them figure out what is going on. Whether you're an educator, a therapist, or a parent, we really think this will be a helpful guide for you.
This book was so fun to be a part of, and we are excited to pass it from our hands to yours. So when you leave us a podcast review, you'll get one entry to get a free copy of our book, A Jumble of Thoughts, A Tangle of Feelings, Inspired by Emotionally Focused Therapy. We'll announce the winner on social media platforms and on a future episode. We really appreciate your support. Before you know it, a copy of the book could be on your doorstep.
Being a listener to you two, like, I would have to listen to this episode 10 times to, like, fully digest and metabolize what you two are talking about. What I can tell you, listening to the two of you talk and that role play that James had done, and then Catherine, the one that you did just now, is as a listener, as a parent, I just went through a ton of emotional shift as you two did these demos. From like anxiety and I'm doing it wrong and oh no, and I'm just like panicked, to then shame of like, I'm doing it wrong, no. And then some relief as you validated my caregiving and my parental intent. And then warmth as you helped me right my ship and go back into my parenting role and say, but I can affect some change now. I can have a positive impact now. And that was just such a warmth in my body as you two took me to those levels. That was such an experience. Thank you so much. And I don't know if our listeners went through that, but I can tell you, I went through that as I listened.
Well, that says a lot about the good parts of you. You, Rhonda, that you let yourself kind of ride those waves. Yeah,
absolutely. Because I want to experience what our parents experience in the room. So part of what I get to do is when I'm listening is I get to kind of put myself in that parenting role. And what a gift you guys just gave me. And I hope our listeners got something helpful out of it, too. They might have to listen to it 10 times, but we'll see.
Thank you, Rhonda. And I think what I'm hearing you say, though, is it's the gift of attachment. It's the gift of attachment that families get into these patterns, parents get into these patterns. But if we can reframe it all and attachify it all and come back to that place of everyone in this room has needs to be seen and heard and understood and valued. And if we can make sense of the coping strategies that they come from these vulnerable places, every time we just focus back on attachment and we're left with that, the warm and fuzzies, right?
Yes. As you were talking just now, Catherine, and I was saying, this is attachment. This is the, for me, how I understand what you just said, Catherine, is this is the parent being helped by the therapist, right? And so I got a visual. For those of you who don't know me, I love pirate stuff. I have my alter ego. and so I use the term for myself of right my ship when I'm off balance, I need to right my ship. I got a visual of Catherine, you coming alongside of me, taking the helm of the ship, taking the wheel of the ship and riding my ship for me so that you could help me get back on balance. Because I felt you come on my ship. Right.
And, you know, thank you, Rhonda. And as James was giving the scenario of the adult child who's actually like maybe emotionally 14 needing their parent, and then the parent is so deeply affected by what the child's saying that the parent starts flooding. What I was thinking in my mind is now we need the grandma or pa in the room to hold the actual parent, right? Like their parents were meant to be there to hold them in a moment so that then they can parent their child. And so it's like, I would suddenly wish for this three generational system And because their parents aren't there to hold them, I'm coming in a parenting capacity to be there for the parent, right?
Yeah. That surrogate attachment figure, stronger, wiser, other in the moment, you know?
Yeah. So, okay. So, James, have you ever been in a situation where, okay, the parent goes to shame mm-hmm. in a pretty rough way, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then before you can do anything, the child does jump into, you could maybe call it like a parentified role. Mm-hmm. Like the child starts crying for out of compassion and nurture for the parent's pain. Mm-hmm. And then the child jumps into caregive the parent. Mm-hmm. Like I literally had this happen about a week ago with the daughter, I'd say, was about 21, 22. But I could see that this was a well-edged pattern in the family system.
Mm-hmm.
What do you make of that? Because like in this family system, this was a pretty, in some ways, well-functioning family.
Yeah.
And so there had clearly been like a coping mechanism for this, the oldest daughter, like taking care of her mom.
Yeah.
And then like, what do you do with that?
Yeah. So in that case where Jim was supervising me, that was almost like the case.
Okay.
So I'm not saying this is right. So this is where I'm inviting you two to give me some supervision feedback here. You thought I was just coming to show up for free. I'm getting some free supervision. But no, in that situation, I remember with the client and I just had to thank the client and like, I really appreciate, like, I so wish someone could have been there for your mother and done this for her. That I wish, in a way, I wish that, like, I wish the older, wiser, other people in her life could have done this for her. But there was nobody. But here you were as a loving, caring daughter. You knew what mom went through. And even now, it still breaks your heart. And I so appreciate that she was able to raise a woman like you who can be compassionate.
Mm-hmm.
But here's why I wanted to be curious if we can do this today, though. I really appreciate that you can cry for mom and that you can show up for her. But you've made so many options from being a little girl where you put you aside to protect mom. Can mom have the permission to be there for you today, though?
Oh,
mom, do you think you could give her that permission that she could let you be the mom here and you could look out for her?
Oh, wow. Okay. That's fantastic. Thank you. I want to repeat that so I can get it in my head. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. So, wow, daughter, you're an amazing person. Look mm-hmm. how you're able to suddenly turn around and take care of your mom in this way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's both amazing. You've clearly learned this nurturing, caregiving part of self.
Mm-hmm.
And can I be curious for a moment about what it's like to, what it has been like to play that role with your mom over time? Yeah. And could we even try to do something a little different today?
Yeah.
Which is where we reverse our roles and let's help mom see that you've been doing this through these years.
Yes.
And have a moment to speak to and get curious about what that's been like for you to play this role with your mom.
Yes.
Ah.
Yes. And the secret to that is, if I say this, it's not a secret, it's attachment. But it's if I want the daughter's adopted this protective strategy for a reason. If I just ask her to give it up and tell her it's bad, then life has given her enough. She's like, I can refute that, you know?
Yeah.
And so I need to be able to validate the good reasons for its existence before I can ask her to try something different. So first validate the good reasons why it's there, honor it, appreciate it. And then sometimes even in this particular case, they did give me a commercial release, but in this one it was, but nobody's ever done that for her. So I have to do it. Mm. I have to.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but anyway, and then after that, after you've given enough permission, and for me, it's looking for that nonverbal cue where I can see her begin to say, yes, I'll give up the parentified role for a moment and be a daughter. And then in that one, I did have the mom and act something like, could you turn and tell your daughter that she has that permission, that you're okay enough, that she doesn't have to look out for you right now, that you want to be the mom for her?
Okay, question. I really like that move then around letting the mom do something corrective.
Mm-hmm.
If the mom is in that place of shame, though, are you just trusting that mom can get back there? Or would you say that based on something you're seeing from the mom?
Good question.
That mom's able to, right?
That's good. Now that
I know, like the mom that I try to do that with, when I pointed out the caregiving, like it's like, then she even went into a tailspin around, oh, I'm meant to, yeah, I'm not meant to put this on her. Oh my goodness. It's like seeing the impact of that over the years, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, there's so many ways you could go with that. Let me clarify one thing too with this. And this, Ryan helped me with this one with another case. Ryan's another EFT trainer that works here in Arkansas with me. Because there's a difference between just the experience of shame and behavioral shame. And here's what I mean. Of course, I mean, if a parent really does feel some sense of, I totally missed that. I feel bad about that. Mm-hmm. You know, that's one level of work. I'm still not going to make the child have to fix that. But that's different. And then also there's like sometimes where clients behaviorally show shame without the experience. What I mean is this. Sometimes it's the moment a child talks about something that maybe makes the parent feel uncomfortable, they'll just immediately hit you with, see, it's because I'm a horrible person.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Sounds like a phrase from shame. But also what it does behaviorally is, what usually happens behind that is the parent says, see, I was a horrible person. Then in some patterns, what you'll pick up on in the family is people then try to reassure that parent.
Yeah.
Oh, no, you're not so bad. You did this well, and I appreciate this. And what you invariably, what's the pattern you see happening? I get positive reinforcement when I say horrible things about myself or tell I'm horrible. So
you're saying when shame shows up like that for the parent, sometimes it's an opening?
No, not that one.
But this one is a defense.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. Gotcha. Yeah. That's cool. Yeah.
Whereas the first one, maybe there is more opening. Still, you have to make sure that you have the appropriate time and place for that.
Yeah. Well, what do you think of this? I mean, and maybe we conceptualize shame and guilt differently, but like sometimes there's guilt is an adaptive good. Yeah. Emotional response because you're like, oh shucks, I just saw something. You're right. I've been doing this, you know, in a not so good way. And what alleviates guilt is taking responsibility for it, acknowledging it, and then doing it differently.
Exactly.
So if in this moment with my mom I'm talking about, she suddenly realizes, oh, that's been an unhelpful response that my daughter's had to carry for me. But if she realizes that in this moment and it hits her emotionally, but she can come back around and acknowledge it and speak for their child, that could be supremely helpful.
I would say that's an ideal moment. If they're seeing it in real time, like, oh, so you see it right now? You see your daughter's position? Whoa, and that hits you. You even touch your chest as you see it.
Wow.
Because even as you touch your chest, as you see it, like, what is that? Maybe what is the message from your chest or what is your body inclined to do for your child as you see them right here in this place? Because that's where, once again, we're trusting that emotion wants to do something. Right. For many of our parents, and you tell me if I'm on the right track with this, Catherine. For many of our parents, I think the right instinctual things are in them. They just haven't learned how the ability to tap into it and to let it work in the moment.
So
if a parent feels guilt in the moment, And their guilt's like, oh, I see my child. I didn't realize I was teaching them that. I didn't know that's what they were picking up on.
Yeah.
And if they can see that and hold it, but also still convert to their child, then that's them being the stronger, wiser other.
Yeah.
And we want to put that into action.
Right. Right. And they might be able to get there quickly if we can quickly step in, be there for them emotionally, bring them back to their parental intent, give them the structure. Then they can move out of it. But you're also saying there are some parents where they can't get there and shame that comes up for them is an actual block.
Yes.
And they're needing their own reassurance, which we don't pull for from the family. But then the therapist would need to step into that place and realize that they need a lot more resourcing individually before they can step up back into their parenting role.
I like that. You know, I like clean, simple language in some ways. So I like even what you just said, like when I think about blocks now in EFFT, is it blocking the parental intent?
Yeah.
Does it keep the parental intent from being able to come forward? That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. And parents, don't remember, parents only have to be accessible 30% of the time. But it is tricky if you can't be accessible in a moment your kid really needs it. The trick is knowing that you're blocked so that you can tag someone else in or out. And that's where it's helpful to have multiple parents or at least multiple caregivers in a system so that if you're losing your balance, you can be like, ah, take the baton, someone else, even if it's the therapist, right?
Well, I like that you touched on the cultural element even right there, right, Catherine? You know, are we going to take kind of like a Western mindset where it's like just me and my nuclear family and they were the only ones that ever do any kind of parenting? Or do you take more of a collectivist kind of communal form of like a family in a setting?
Right. Which means that parents need to have that skill of asking for help, reaching out with their needs, knowing that that's okay. You know,
which is why I like how you and Lisa are like using the multiple modalities of EFT to really resource your clients, because that could be some EFIT time of working. That could be some couples time of learning how, like, I never reach out and tag my partner in because I don't know if I'm worthy of someone being showing up for me, or I'm just going to, you know, there could be so many blocks to where they don't know how to get resource in order to be available for their child.
Right. And then with these parents who are losing themselves to shame, you look over if there is another parent in the room, and did that parent step in or did they just sort of disappear?
Yeah.
Like, what's happening? What's happening in the parental subsystem?
Yeah, that's good. Whew,
this is heavy stuff. But this is where the action is, right? With EFFT, I think.
I think so. Yeah. What's taking away the good parental intent? Or at least blocking the message of the child's vulnerability, somehow tapping and activating the parental intent.
This is so great. This is so helpful. And I know, like I said, I could listen to this 10 times and learn something new every time. There is one thing that I just have to like double check on. And that's what you were saying, James, about the I'm horrible moment, where it's kind of that behavioral shame. And I just really got to ask the question, like, what do you do with that?
Oh, yes. Good.
Ooh, I'm not going to say this is all together right, but it's like, it depends on the one. It depends on how much alliance and how many times it's happened.
Okay.
At first, I might try to see if I can just like gently get around it. But then if it keeps popping up and it is a pattern to it, and if I have enough rapport, then I might say, whoa, this is almost like a SUE intervention. So let me try what I think I'm seeing here. Like right at this moment, your child starts talking about this place where, you know, they maybe it's hard for them to come forward. And as you see that, you just kind of you go to this place, and it's happened a couple of times. You just start saying, I'm horrible. And then right when you say I'm horrible, your child, or maybe it might be the other partner, they come in and they start reassuring you like, wow, that's kind of hard. I want you to be able to get that reassurance in times when it's not just right in this moment, when maybe your child's kind of needing you, or the only way that you can get attention or people come towards you is when you say, I'm horrible. Now, I'm not saying that's a rough one. You have to have a lot of alliance, because that's a direct one.
That's a direct one. Yeah. That sounds like something I would do.
So I'm just saying that, but it is like a one. You just need them to see the timing.
The timing.
I really appreciate that there's a part of you that is touched by this, and you do see your child. But right in this moment, in this time, I want to see if maybe you can give me about 5 to 7 more minutes to say, focus on your child. And then we'll see what we need to do to come back around to you. You all, because if I come around right now, then it's going to leave your child still alone. And I don't think that's what you want. I know you want the best for them. So I wonder if we can work together and keep our focus there for them for a moment, and then figure out how we come over and help you.
Very direct, very explicit.
Some of it is. It's all just trying to make it explicit in the moment.
And seeing the cycle, right? How that cycle plays out.
Yeah. And usually, I'm not saying 100%, usually that one helps me big time in those moments to shift that and to redirect it back. And then it's also showing them the pattern. And so hopefully they can catch it and change it.
Yeah.
Because if that parent needs reassurance, there's nothing wrong with them needing some reassurance.
Yeah.
But just not in the time of the child's vulnerability.
Right.
And I'll go back to what Catherine said. Is there someone else that we can kind of have them go talk to get some of that reassurance?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if that somehow doesn't work, then that's where we can separate the sessions out and do some of that more individually.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Until that pattern can shift a little bit.
Yeah.
Nice.
Wow.
Well, really, really fun chatting through these tough spots with you, Dr. Hawk. Really appreciated.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad there's a platform to have these conversations about family work.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been, I think it's been phenomenal. And I have a feeling our listeners are going to really get a lot from this one. So thank you. Thank you so much, Doc Hawk. And the way that you two were able to talk, or not able to, the way you two talked about this, you two use different language, but the different languaging, I think, helps different brains. Mm. And also in this conversation, putting it into these different languages and different terms that both of you use, just super helpful. Like, I have a pretty clinical brain and I use a lot of clinical terms. And then it's helpful to like step out of that for myself and not use such clinical terms, but recognizing I'm talking about the same thing. So just super helpful, I think, for our listeners. Thank you so much, Doc Hawk.
Thank you all. Thank you so much.
That's it for today, folks. Thank you for listening. And we hope to see you again for our next journey.